All right, hello and good morning. Welcome to my show. My name is Adela Wisdom and I'm running for Congress for United States Representative of the 3rd Congressional District of Missouri. So that pretty much covers northern Jefferson County and extends northwest past the St. Louis area, covering much of east central Missouri. Consists of counties from Callaway, all the way to Miller, Montgomery, Osage, parts of St. Charles, and even Warren. So if you live in that district, I am running to represent you. We currently have 4 different people that are running for this position. One is your incumbent, Blaine Lutenmeyer, and the other two ran 2 years ago during the prior election, and it's Chad Bickwell and Katie Jeppert, I think is her last name. So you have 3 Republicans and 1 Democrat to choose from. I'm a constitutional Republican, a little bit different from the other 2 Republican candidates that are running for office. I base everything I do on my Constitution, not my party lines. Therefore, I have the ability to remember that we, the people, come first. So even if I disagree with a topic 100% or entirely, I am willing to find a common ground, negotiate, and discuss a common ground and alternatives to complex solutions or complex issues and find good solutions to them. So I asked about a month ago for people to start giving me questions. So I take a different question every day and I do a written response. I take that same question a week later, I do a YouTube video, and then I follow up with it a week later with the radio show. So it's 3 weeks every day. Like I take a topic and from 3 weeks out, we continually talk about it. And so every day, that means I'm doing a different video and a different radio show. So I'm covering 3 different topics every day. But the beauty about giving myself 3 weeks to discuss and learn more about these is I've really solidified my stance and my position, and or I've learned about the other side of the views, and I've come to understand where the common ground is needed and where the compromise is needed. So I really appreciate all of the feedback. If you go to my webpage, adelawisdom.com, you'll see I have my private address up there, my personal cell phone, and my personal email. So I really want you to contact me. I don't care if you call me, email me, or write me. I just really want to hear what concerns you have, what issues are important to you, and what you expect from your elected officials. So I'm not going to be bought and paid for by big black dark money. I really want to represent the will of my constituency. And if that means talking about these important issues and really getting in there, and so be it. So I don't want people to just throw out the book and be like, oh, she's a Republican, I will never vote Republican. I want people to listen to my issues and my views and learn what I'm actually bringing to the table. Hold on 1 second, folks. Kind of got an emergency. Hold on 1 sec. All right, sorry about that. I do this radio show live in my house, and I usually have everything took care of, and I've had a dog that needed to go out. I'm a small farmer. I live out here in Williamsburg, Missouri, and in Callaway County, right off of the 70. So stuff like that happens sometimes. Anyways, so back to the questions I was talking about. Today we're on question 24. So this original question came to me 3 weeks ago. I think we're on question 40. For the written responses. So today was about asset forfeiture, and do you support asset forfeiture? No, I 100% do not support asset forfeiture as it stands today, only because I am such an advocate when it comes to judicial reform. I'm pretty knowledgeable and educated on this topic, so I do understand the complexities of it, what it was intended to be for, and what it's done now and how it's being used now is not. It's not the same thing. And so we need to do some corrections and some addressing to the situation. And I'm going to go ahead and explain why I don't support asset forfeiture. So asset forfeiture is a powerful tool used by law enforcement agencies, including the FBI and the DEA, against criminals and criminal organizations to deprive them of their ill-gotten gains through seizures of these assets. And that's straight from the FBI's webpage. That's the intent of it, right? However, some police abuse the civil asset forfeiture law, and they have and are now becoming incentivized for doing wrongful forfeitures. Why is this happening? So civil forfeiture allows police to seize, keep or sell anything that they believed or was alleged in an involved crime. See, asset forfeitures can happen when an arrest or a conviction of a crime. Like I said, they can take your cash, cars, even real estate, or permanently. They can take it permanently away from you. They can. Now here's the trick. You can even have your assets took away from you and seized and never returned if you're found not guilty. Or even if they drop the case. Now you have to fight in a civil case to get your assets back, meaning you have to pay for everything. And sometimes, like pay for everything, like pay for the courts, pay for an attorney. And sometimes that cost can be more than the items that they took. So originally forfeiture was presented as a way to cripple large-scale criminal enterprises by diverting their resources. But today, aided by deeply flawed federal and state laws, many police departments use forfeiture to benefit their bottom line. So making seizures motivated by profit rather than crime fighting. So people whose property has been seized through civil asset forfeiture, legally regaining such property is notoriously difficult and expensive. And sometimes, like I said, the costs exceed the value of the property. This is a judicial issue reform. And I am an advocate for fixing our judicial system. And these are some of the complexities that I talk about. You got judicial reform, you got bail, you got bonds, you got private prisons, you got asset forfeiture, you got industrialized prisons complex, you got private prisons, you got organizations making money from cell phone, from emails and phone calls from the prison. You got the food people making the money. And then you got all of these people investing in stock inside of private prisons. This is horrendous. We are incentivizing mass incarceration of people by doing things like asset forfeiture. So, like, what if I told you, and this is a true story, that the DEA is 100% funded by asset forfeiture? DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, of course they are. 75% of all crimes nationwide, 75% are drug-related. And 99% of every case, regardless of what it is, take a plea deal. Every 36 seconds, someone in the United States of America is arrested for cannabis. And 99% of those people are going to plead guilty. Whether it's simple possession, intent to distribute, they call that, cultivation, conspiracy, 99% of all people nationwide take a plea deal. So if the DEA is totally funded by asset forfeiture, what is the, and majority of their cases, like in majority of the people that are arrested in our judicial system are there for drugs. And a lot of them are there for nonviolent cannabis-only offenses or nonviolent drug-only offenses, which need rehabilitation, not incarceration. How then is taking their assets helping? Okay, so I can even tell you, say you're in a conspiracy, and I can tell you the cases of people. If you really want to know, I can bring names into this. I could tell you people that are in prison for life without the possibility of parole because they're there for conspiracy charges. They conspired to so-called sell cannabis. And they were busted with a dry case, no weed, no seed, no plants, nothing. A confidential informant put them in there and said that they were probably trying to sell something. And this is a person that's guilty and they're working for the government. And a lot of times they're paid by the government. But we're taking a person who's innocent until proven guilty. And we're taking the word over a guilty person. Absolutely horrendous. Now, say they conspired. And during this time, they're saying they conspired. They're watching them for like a year long on this investigation, right? This is just how it happens. And they never catch the person bringing anything over. But what they do for this whole year is they follow them. And every single person's house they went to, including their parents, can be took from the the DEA can take it because they could have said it was aided and abetted in this conspiracy charge that they were storing cannabis or whatever at their parents' house, allegedly, and therefore that parent's house has to be took. Wow. And unfortunately, when you hear people talking about asset forfeiture, it's one-sided. It's really hard to get somebody else besides law enforcement to get up there and talk about, hey, this isn't good for you. Okay, here's another thing you see, and I know somebody this happened to. When you see a cop driving around and it says, this car was confiscated by a drug dealer. Well, they say you're a drug dealer if you have a gram of cannabis on you. Or you have personal use, they're going to get you. They boil the noodles and they throw them at the wall, and whatever charges they get to stick, they stick. So they get you with as many charges as they can. That increases your bail or your bond and harder for your chances to get out. But it also gives them a more likelihood of getting a guilty plea because now they have grounds to what they say negotiate with you, right? So they get to say, okay, well, we'll get rid of this charge. These heavy charges, if you plead guilty to this charge, guilty to that charge. And every time you plead guilty to a charge, you know, it just keeps aiding to it. So I don't know. It looks like we've got some callers on. I'm not too sure who they are, but I'm going to go ahead and bring somebody on right now. And welcome to the show. Good morning. Hello. Hi. This is Adela Wisdom.
Yes. Are you in Missouri? Is this
yes,
the third?
Yes, sir. I am. Yes.
Is that Ann Wagner?
District. Blaine Lutemeyer?
Oh, Lutemeyer, yeah.
Yes, sir.
I lived in Lacey Clay's district.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sick and tired of hearing. But I like what you're saying. But I wanted to add this. Myself, I'm for the legalization of street drugs. Because addicts are sick. I'll give you my pretense why. Addicts are sick. And if you legalize the drugs and have dispensaries where an addict could come and get their proper quantity, quality, and sit and be monitored before they leave. And if wanted, they can sign up for treatment. Then that street violence that's associated with sales and distribution, and also the things like you're saying, would go away quite a bit. Because the way it's going now, it's not working. And many innocent men, women, or children are getting killed, maimed, wounded because of this street violence. And as you say, with this asset forfeiture, a person can be coming from the bank, having cashed a check, or going to buy a car, and then it's on. And the funny thing with these people that take your assets, they don't know how to count. You may have $1,000 and they count $500 and say, well, that's what we counted. So
you're right. And you have to prove. And then you have to prove to them that was your money and that was from a check. And there is some states, too, that actually seize your credit cards and they will freeze your bank, your actual personal bank account. So this has definitely got – I think we're incentivizing police departments to incarcerate or to seize products or to be creative in the way that they're prosecuting people. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, so I don't know if you are successful in getting in that position. Or if not, you know, continue to talk about it. But also think and do some studying on the legalization of these street drugs. Because what good is it doing? You know, the cocoa plant in Peru is $2.20 last time I heard a kilo. $2.20 for 2.2 pounds. When that drug that's derived from that plant, after it went through all the networks to get to the streets of downtown St. Louis or downtown Chicago or Baltimore, it sells for over $90,000 a kilo.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, the the dispensary, look at the room that you have there in case you want to have money to go toward rehab facilities, education for it. So
no,
anyway,
I
just wanted to put
you.
That.
Well,
you
I
don't
appreciate
think about
you
that.
Calling in. No, you're right, because it's not like if you legalize street drugs, I don't do them. So even if you did, say, legalize something like heroin, I don't believe that people are going to be like, oh, well, it's legal, let me jump on that. But with that being said, I think you're right about being able to invest the money from something like that into education and helping people become maybe prior
whatever.
To ever preventative before maybe they ever
and
got to that point.
If you look at the countries that have done so, not only have the violence went down, but the usage went down. It seems that when something is illegal, people like to always get involved in it, but it's free and sitting there on the curb, they walk away thinking something wrong. And I'm going to leave with this. I'm going to leave with this. You have never seen, at least I haven't seen, anyone, two people on opposite sides of the streets shooting at each other over a bottle of Jack Daniels that they could walk down to the liquor store and purchase legally. So anyway,
oh, I thank you for your input, sir. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a great day. I'm going to go ahead and let you continue listening. Thank you for your feedback. I appreciate it. All right. It looks like we've got another caller I'm going to bring on right now. Hello. Good morning. And my show. How are you doing?
How are you? the last caller. If he's still listening, and if you want to bring him back on again, it'd be good because it'll be a three-way conversation. Not that I disagree with him, I don't. When I was listening to you, you were saying that 99% of the cases that go to trial or don't go to trial because of plea bargaining. Is that 99% of drug cases or 99% of all felonies?
All cases, sir, that go to trial. We have a 99% nationwide plea deal on all cases.
Okay, when I took a look at the FBI statistics, it was something like 65 to 70%. But 99% is a very, very high number. But there's another thing I want you to describe. You were talking about if somebody who is innocent of never smoking weed or distributing pot can somehow be jailed because somebody gave an anonymous tip, some informant, who probably wanted to get money for his drugs. Did I understand you right?
Yes, sir. Specifically, the case I'm referencing is a guy named James Roman, Jimmy Romans. He was the state of Indiana said that he was selling cannabis, and he did fight his case in Indiana and won. And shortly after that, the federal government got involved and got him for this. He was tried. The venue that picked him up was in Texas. A little town said that he maybe drove through our district, and because he possibly could have driven through our district under this conspiracy charge to pick up cannabis from Texas, that they went ahead and went forward, and in a federal court of law, he had absolutely no defense, and he had this confidential informant testify against him. He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole on what we call a dry case and a ghost case. He has currently had his sentence reduced to 30 years, but he's 45 years old, and he won't be out until he is 66 years old.
Okay. So what you're saying is that if for some reason I don't like somebody, I can drop a dime on them.
Yes,
I can call either the FBI or the cops, make an anonymous tip, and say, Mr. Jones is dealing drugs, and he lives at such and such address, and I think you guys should investigate, and that's all it takes.
Because they've already been brought in as a confidential informant, so something's happened to them where they've gotten arrested, and now the government is using them to.
Okay, then I understand. What I want to make clear is this: the confidential informant, the CIs, yeah, I can understand that they're going to court. Well, I just want to make sure that just because, you know, you break up with a girl, that she doesn't call the cops, you know, and say, well, you know what, this guy's dealing drugs. I saw it in his house. I don't want to give you my name. Do you know of any particular cases where, not a CI, but where just an anonymous tip got somebody into trouble and that person was innocent?
Yeah, well, we're all innocent until proven guilty. Yeah, there's a guy named Zach here in Missouri that just got a hold of me. That there, if you read the paper too, I can share the link on my page. That somebody called the post office and said that he was going to be delivering cannabis to his house, and so they got the highway patrol, called the police, or the tip was to the highway patrol. They called the police. They called the post office. Worked with the post office. They did a controlled delivery. The guy didn't want the package. It was addressed to his wife, not to him. And as soon as they put the package on the doorstep, they raided him.
And the package was sent by the cops?
They don't know. They said it was a tip, and he doesn't know where the package
All
came
right.
from.
Do you know that's actually happened? I mean, not just that case. I was taking a look at the Depolito case. It's a case that happened about 6 to 8 years ago. Well, I don't know if you're familiar with it. I think her first name is Dahlia DiPolito. What she had done, she had hired a hitman who was working for the cops to try to kill her husband. But prior to that, she was giving these anonymous tips to cops, and the cops were pulling him over several times, and they also ransacked his house, and he didn't know why. But when the hitman was, like I said, was an undercover cop. And the conversation was recorded. So they found out that it was his wife who was doing all of this nonsense. But she actually, it's amazing, she actually went to trial 3 times. She was not convicted until the 3rd trial. Because she said that even though she was on tape, that she was acting. She was acting in order to try to get an acting job. And the jury bought it. Well, the jury didn't buy it. She had to go to trial 3 times. So it must have been a hung jury, I guess. But it's crazy. And when you were talking about civil asset forfeitures, do you also know that if you get pulled over, like the caller, like if you follow my suggestion, if you let him back in, because I know
he's I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I didn't tell him. He is live on the show. I'm sorry.
Yeah, hi, Joe.
How you doing? In the civil asset cases, cops can pull you over for a traffic stop, find out, like Bianchi was saying, take a look in your wallet, all of a sudden you've got $1,000, and they'll seize it. You don't even have to go to trial. They'll just take it, keep it, and then you have to go.
You know what else is coming out of this?
Mm-hmm.
This deal with guns on the mental conditions of people,
oh, yeah.
Whereas they are disqualified them from ownership of weapons. We're talking about a whole list of things from Ritalin. If you ever been in a brain concussion from playing sports, poor grades, eating disorders, all this ties in with somebody calling and saying, hey, I think this person here has got this problem.
Mm.
And that's very, 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 very possible today because everybody is either, PC or anti-PC or... And, an extremely divisive nation. And, people are going to – this is an era now. Everybody loves to be a victim or try to make somebody a victim. Excuse me. So,
have you ever tried to write a law, a bill before, Adela?
Yeah, actually, I've sat on a couple of task force where we implemented a couple of rules and regulations. I did that in San Diego. I was appointed by the mayor to sit on a couple task force, and I was also part of a town council in the city of Linda Vista. So I did work on helping implement quite a few bills and rules and regulations in San Diego, from a roller skate land to a children's center. I helped with a lifeguard, and I also sat on two medical marijuana task force, one appointed by the mayor and one I was a consultant to help them create rules and regulations.
Well, there's a gentleman by the name of Greg Finless, and he has a blog talk radio show, and he also has a website where people, regular citizens, can come in and write legislation. I have written some legislation before, and I'm going to pass his contact on to you.
Please
where
do.
Where you can, get in contact with them or come listen to the show. But, what you're talking about is very, very needed. And most people do not know that this is going on the way it is.
Until they're a victim. But I am. Adele, I want to ask you something. So you've been in the legislature before?
No, sir.
You haven't? Okay. No. Have you ever thought about the process of making a bill a law? Because the reason why I ask is because when I thought about it, I thought it must have been the most screwed up process that was ever invented. For example, let's say you're running for, you're a Democrat, or you know, I think you're a Republican, whatever the party you want to choose, and you're running for Congress for the district in your area, right? And your platform is lower taxes and to defund Planned Parenthood, for example. Now, I'm running for the other district, representing, you know, next to your district as a Democrat, let's say. And my platform is to raise taxes because my ideology is, you know, soak the rich, and to fund Planned Parenthood. Now, when we both get elected, and Nancy Pelosi and who's the other guy? McConnell. They
Schumer.
Agree. yeah, they agree on a bill. Now we have to vote on it. Now, if you vote now, right? Remember now, your campaign promise was to lower taxes and defund Planned Parenthood, but the bill has opposite of what you campaigned for. There has one issue which you like, the other issue you don't like. So by that process, if you vote for the lowering of taxes, you're also voting for the continuation of the funding of Planned Parenthood via this bill. And with me, my campaign promise was to raise taxes, which now, this bill doesn't fulfill, but to raise more money for Planned Parenthood. So both of us get what we want, while at the same time, both of us do not get what we want. And we can go back to our constituents and we can say, well, we voted for our campaign promise, but then our particular opponent will say, no, you didn't. The point I'm getting to is I think there should be a line-by-line veto by the president. Because bills are not one bill. Bills are earmarks, and there's a myriad of two or three or four other topics in the bill. How can anybody vote for a bill when that bill contains contradictory issues?
And that's exactly what that's why I'm running for Congress, because we need to address that before we write these bills. And you're right. And I talk about how complex this issue, like when I said in the beginning of the show, this asset forfeiture started with judicial reform. And within judicial reform, there's all of these branches. So it can't just be a judicial reform bill. We need to break it apart into what it consists of. Asset forfeiture, the industrialized prison complex, which is privatization of prisons and you know, which incorporates immigration detention, private prisons, which also incorporates juvenile hall, which also incorporates the parole department, which also incorporates the prisons and JPAY and all these other organizations that are profiting from it. So it's a huge issue. And I think you're right. One of the things that they do is make these bills so complex that the not just the people voting for it, but the constituency is so confused. You know, a lot of people don't realize when a congressperson gets put a bill on, sometimes they get a 500-page bill and they have 15 minutes before they could go vote on it. Or it's
absolutely
so highly classified that it's so didactic and truncated that you don't even know what it is, but yet you're supposed to vote on it. That's why I think bringing social media, all aspects of social media, from using live television media to social media to the radio, to tell people like, hey, by the way, I have to vote on this and I'm supposed to vote on this in 30 minutes. How am I supposed to read it? But explain to the people that there's things that's the problem, is that they're pushing these things through willy nilly and they're so complex. How come none of these people just go, wait a minute, let's break this apart more, you know?
And Bianchi, wouldn't you agree that just shows that Congress is bought and paid for by lobbyists? If they're the ones who are supposed to be passing bills, yet they're the ones who say they're forced to read a bill in 15 minutes. If they're at the top of the hierarchy in terms of making laws and they say they're not allowed to read the bill, then who's running Congress?
Well, it's a lot of things out there that's crooked. You know, like when football players was kneeling on the field, Adela?
Mm-hmm.
Each and every one of those football, I'm saying each and every one of them, but being the fact that they're millionaires and make a lot of money, they have money managers. The money managers have a fiduciary duty to get a highest return as they possibly can on their investment. And they're investing in NEO. They're investing in Prison Complex of America. They're investing in the very things that they're saying is wrong with society. So there's a lot of things that's a sham. It really is.
I'm so glad you said that. Your people have no idea what you just touched on right there. That is irony at its fullest. Yes, the NBA, yes, the NFL, they all invest in our privatizations of prisons. So it's ironic at best for people to be like, hey, I'm protesting it. Protest it and not work in an industry that's buying it. At one time, the Columbia University had $8 million of stock in the privatization of prisons. Judges, their pension and their retirement is bought into stock in private prisons, in GEO. And how are they then, by being non-biased, isn't it in their best interest to keep the prisons as full as they can to make sure that their stock in those prisons, their retirement, is giving them an investment?
The same thing with CPS.
I tell you another thing, too, I have talked on. I think that police officers should be made to carry their own liability insurance.
I got a friend that believes that, too. Good on you.
Just like you are with your automobile. And if you have too many claims against your policy, guess what? They're going to drop you and nobody will want to carry you.
That's an idea because the cops are there too willy-nilly with their guns. They're too willy-nilly with pulling over people. You can take a look at YouTube and you'd be surprised. Like assembly women, assembly men, the mayor's sons, cops are being pulled over by other cops. They think that they're immune from the law. And our country, I hate, you know me, Bianchi, we've been on Black Talk for a few years. I believe this country is just corrupt as hell because Congress is corrupt. But let me ask you a question, Adele. You're against civil asset forfeitures. So let's say you ran on that particular campaign promise. And you also ran on lowering taxes. But a bill comes to you, and the bill is, we are going to eliminate as much as possible civil asset forfeitures, but we're going to raise taxes. What do you do?
I just don't know why they have to be together.
You got that right.
I think you
should fight for separate bills, for separate issues, so that the American people don't have to get hornswoggled anymore.
No, I agree. And there's so many things that we could do. Like, let's say we refix the Controlled Substance Act. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, every 36 seconds, someone in this country is arrested for cannabis only. And if we stopped going after people for drugs, all drugs, how much more are we going to free up our police department to not be like, oh, okay, I think I smelled cannabis, or I think I saw paraphernalia, and now we can really go after finding disappeared, the children that have been kidnapped and disappeared, or missing people, or violent crimes. So something unique happened to me. I recently applied. I am a pro-con constitutional Republican, so I'm pro my constitution. And it was my birthday in March, and I went to go purchase a gun. And I thought I was going to be approved right away, and I wasn't. And so I'm waiting the 5 days, and I wake up, and I'm super excited to go get it. And I get a phone call saying I've been denied. I was floored. Shortly after that, I'm like, okay, what do? I apply to get all the information I need to do. I go to the highway patrol. I get my fingerprints. I submit it to the FBI. And then I had to be in Australia, so I have a speaking event there. And on my way back, I'm coming through the customs in America, in Los Angeles, and I'm pulled over into secondary, and they asked me, have I recently tried to purchase a gun? And I said, I'm in America. Like, I will walk right out these doors. What does that have to do with me coming here? I have no firearms on me. They say, can I have your social security number? I tell them no. They hold me for 30 minutes. They finally let me go. I am devastated. I come home. I find a letter that I've been denied yet again, and I'm tripping out. I don't know what to do. I'm contacting a lawyer at this point. They're telling me I'm a felon. I'm not a felon. I've traveled the world. I've been in prisons to do interviews. You can't be a felon and get into these places. And I finally, a week later, get a letter from the FBI saying, we're wrong. You are and can be approved to have a firearm. So I do understand that there's some, like, crazy issues that are happening.
Yeah, somebody's playing with you. Somebody's playing with you, Adele. And I'm a constitutionalist conservative, too. I'm African-American. I openly profess that I support this president. You should hear the attacks that I get. I'm a racist. And see, you know, we should talk. And see, the thing that I tell white people, you have to stop freezing when somebody calls you a racist, because all they're doing is trying to throw you off point, get you disfocused, and make you go stand in a corner. You need to call, if somebody calls you a nationalist, if someone calls Joe a white supremacist, you should call them a racist, because they are using those words nowadays to throw you completely off.
You're right. Oh, and by the way, Bianchi, I like that analogy that you had made, where you know, which is a very good premise for legalizing drugs. Nobody nowadays shoots people across the street for a bottle of Jack Daniels.
They may have during the times of Prohibition, but you're absolutely right.
They did when JFK's father was heading up Boston. Yeah.
And Joe, I know the district that this lady in. I was in the first. She's in the third. And Lukemeyer, I think he was in construction, commercial construction. And I may have worked on some jobs with him, unless there's more than one.
There is. I think there's Ted Lukemeyer too. There's a couple that are in there. He is he is my incumbent. He's been in 12 years, and
That's 24 years, right?
24, yeah.
I do support term limits. I think term limits are really important. Thank goodness the state of Missouri has them for our state. But I definitely think I don't think career politicians is what our country needs. I think there has to be a time where you need to allow new and fresh people to come in, because that's how you get good perspectives, new ideas. Even if they challenge your beliefs and where you stand, I think it's important, because that challenges you, either helps you solidify your opinion and your belief, and or it lets you see that, I could see this person's point. Maybe I should find a common ground and learn how to negotiate on these topics. I think it's important, but a lot of people don't understand the big money that's involved when you fight against somebody who's an incumbent. Like, he's already raised $600,000 this year. Mm-hmm. He raised $2.4 million in the prior campaign, and the person next that ran with the most money after that was $35,000. But that position only pays pays a lot of money, pays $176,000. But if he's already raised $600,000, he's raised more than he's going to make through his entire, the next 2 years sitting in
office. Now, he's a Democrat, right?
He's a Republican.
Oh, okay. I thought he was a Democrat.
But doesn't
you know, those politicians share parts of their campaign pool. And you know another thing too, Joe, Missouri's got a very, very constitutional gun. It's a constitutional gun state.
Uh-huh.
And Della, I live here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I had to move here because my grandson attends their flagship university, had the established residence. But they have good gun laws too. The thing that I like about them is that when you had a city like not Creve Coeur, but it was another one over there in around University City, they passed a law that forbid open carry, Joe.
Uh-huh.
And they done that just before the legislature came and passed the law and said you can open carry as long as you got a concealed carry permit. And that was good. It wasn't stopping a person from open carry goes against the Second Amendment. But it's better than what they was trying to do.
Well, absolutely. They say they're not trying to confiscate our guns, but that's a damn lie.
They are.
They're trying to confiscate. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I'm a federally recognized Native American from the Cherokee Reservation of Tahlequah, Oklahoma. And I always go back to a treaty that my people have with the federal government. And
which was broken,
I'm sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is Dennis Banks still living? Did you know Dennis Banks?
No, sir.
He was a spokesperson for Native Americans. They were going to Project Jericho. They was traveling across the country to end up in Washington, D.C. in a contingent, which is a bus, stopped in St. Louis, and we put them up in our houses there in St. Louis. So
now you're a real Cherokee, right? You're not related to Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren.
My great grandma walked the Trail of Tears. So yeah, I'm actually recognized through my reservation. My mother is registered. My grandfather was registered, and he was because you're talking about the Second Amendment. I'm also very pro military. My great grandfather is a veteran. My dad's a veteran. My sister-in-law is a veteran, and my grandfather is a Cherokee warrior. He fought during World War II. He only had a third grade education, but yet he was a medic in combat. He served in D-Day, and he was awarded a Bronze Star, two Silver Stars,
cool.
Medic
Did
in combat,
Jim
and
Halfman?
A Purple Heart.
Did you know Jim Halfman? His son was Native American, and they are too. His son went through the same ordeal that the guy on the movie Horse, where it was hanging on the hooks on the flesh of his chest, his breast, until they pulled out. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't being facetious when I was talking about the treaties being broken. From what I understand, is that there hasn't been a treaty, or maybe
they don't do treaties no more. They do it by congressional act. They've done away with treaties years, decades ago.
Yeah.
Which is ironic. Which is ironic because the United Nations actually honors all treaties that the American government made with the Native Americans. So when I went to the United Nations, I spoke at UNGAS a couple of years ago about judicial reform. That was one of the things that had got brought up, because we were protected with our sacraments, whether it was tobacco or cannabis. We also have a bit with peyote, which is also on the Controlled Substance Act, Schedule 1. But we won as that is a right for our sacramental use. But yet the United Nations honors the treaty, but I can't get our government to bat an eye towards us when it comes to it.
Of course not. Of course not. All the treaties have been broken. I was talking about the treaties made from 1860 and even earlier, when the Indians were conquered and the treaties were made in order to have truce, in order to have peace. But what happened, was that the Indians were put on a reservation and the treaties were broken.
The beginning of asset forfeiture? Wow, did we just really flip it all the way back and start from the very beginning? Touche, that was amazing. That was great.
The same person that burned Atlanta, Tecumseh Sherman.
No, that was great. That was great. No, I appreciate you both calling in. I am. But I really appreciate you both calling in, and I really appreciate your input. I do a show every day, so feel free to call in and listen to me.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I do a topic. I do a written topic every day. I do a YouTube video, and then I do a radio show. So live at 10 a.m. every morning, and I got different topics that we talk about, so they're all wonderful, and some of them are controversial.
You do BTR every day?
BTR, tell me.
Black Talk Radio.
Black Talk Radio.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, yes, I do. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I do.
Okay,
so
Dale, I'm
going
to get off from here. Good luck to you. I'm going to pass your information on, too, so you might get something in by Twitter or something. Anyway,
okay.
Good luck to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
You
both have a wonderful day. Thank you. All right. That was a lively, beautiful conversation with two wonderful gentlemen talking a little bit more about asset forfeiture. And I like the way that we wrapped it up at the end with Native Americans and having everything took from them. So it's obviously time that we address this issue with asset forfeiture. Join me tomorrow as we talk about another topic. Go to my webpage at adellawisdom.com. I've got every issue there. And if you click on any of them, I have a direct link to this Blog Talk Radio, BTR. I also have a live YouTube video, and I have the written response. My phone number, my email, and my address is all there. I want to hear from you, so I don't care if you write me, email me, or call me. Just get in touch with me and let me know what concerns, topics, and issues are important to you and what you're looking for in your elected officials. I hope you all have a great day, and tune in tomorrow as we talk about another topic. All right, see you then. Bye.